Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Monday edition, but Dominic Fancy Brian, I'm looking forward to Thursday, man. It's like Thursday Eve right now, but the January 6th committee hearings, the select committee hearings, Dom, I got a big old bag of popcorn. I'm ready. This Thursday, January 9th, 7 p.m. Central Time. We'll broadcast it live, baby, right here on Devil Radio in the Shaw. And then coming up on Monday, the day after my birthday, I'll be nursing a little hangover, a Foxy News hangover. Did I mention I'm going back on Fox News?
Well, you had mentioned they invited you. I had not heard.
I'm going back on my birthday, June 12th.
Happy birthday to you.
But this time, I'm talking about the J6 committee hearing. I don't care. Border, whatever they ask me about, the answer is going to include a reference to the J6 right. hearing. That's my plan. You know,
anything we've learned over the last 10, 11 years, Curtis, that you can ask any question you want, but, you know, the answer may not actually apply to the question asked.
Well, law and order, let's talk about J6. Right. Open borders, let's talk about J6.
Inflation, let's hear more about J6.
Yes, all those topics will eventually pivot by yours truly, the J6. Coming up next week, the day after my Foxy News appearance, 9 o'clock in the morning, Dom, the J6 committee is back at it, live on the 13th, again at 9 o'clock a.m. Central Time on the 15th, skipping you and Trump's birthday. That's courteous of them. On Thursday, the 16th, also at 9 a.m., and here's the confirmation. Want to make sure I was absolutely correct. Tuesday, June 21st, again, a early morning, well, mid-morning, 9 a.m., live event. And then the primetime wrap-up with Adam Kinzinger apparently drawing the noose around Trump. Apparently, they're going to concentrate on Trump's participation in the primetime closing session Thursday, June 23rd, about 7 o'clock Central Time to get started, Dom.
I cannot wait.
I cannot wait
week,
either,
though,
man.
I mean, so obviously we start, you know,
this
Thursday
week, next week, wrapping up. You know,
but next week's got three days, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then you got, you know, all weekend to, you know, consume and have the talking heads digest and people can, you know, get a sense of what's going on. And then what? Just a couple more to one more during the day. And then the final wrap up at night on Thursday, the 23rd. It's going to be great.
Well, Dominic, I'm glad I get to be one of those talking heads, regardless of the topic. I'm talking about the J6 hearings on Foxy News this Sunday. Please tune in about, you know, noonish Central Time. So we'll see. And, you know, the breaking news, the Proud Boys, more seditious conspiracy charges. This is a wide net being, you know, sort of thrown out there by the DOJ now.
Yes.
Now, we knew the Oath Keepers. There had already been 11, I believe, Oath Keepers charged with seditious conspiracy.
Correct.
And now the Proud Boys. We got five more, so we're up to like 16 seditious conspiracy charges. And we've got a couple of cooperating defendants, depending on who's reporting you believe. And Peter Navarro, the DOJ, sort of went after one of Trump's inner circles. Now, that is a misdemeanor charge of contempt of Congress. But we also found out that Dan Scafino and Mark Meadows were not similarly charged by the Department of Justice. So are they turned state's evidence, Dom, or they do just enough cooperating to get by? Or
maybe a little bit of both.
Why didn't Mark Meadows get his ass hauled up the central booking?
There's been lots of analysis on that. I came across Barb McQuaid's Twitter feed on this a couple of days ago in reading different articles in this regard. She's a former U.S. attorney. She appears on MSNBC quite a bit, kind of like our James Santel. And she has some thoughts, and I kind of concur with her in this. So I'm going to read briefly from her Twitter feed at Barb McQuaid. Unlike Bannon and Navarro, who refused to engage with the J6 committee at all, Meadows made some effort to comply with his subpoena, producing documents and emails before abruptly stopping. Meh, she writes. Second, proving contempt requires showing not just failure to comply with the subpoena, but also willfulness. That means the defendant must know his conduct is illegal. Here, the two sets of men have different situations regarding privilege. Bannon and Navarro's privilege claims are laughable. Bannon was not even in the executive branch at the time. Navarro has already waived any privilege by telling his story in a book and media interviews. And for some reason, he keeps confessing to Ari Melber as of last week. On the other hand, Meadows and Scafino, according to Barb McQuaid, as chief of staff and deputy, were Trump's closest advisors. Even if they were wrong about executive privilege, it will be hard to prove to a unanimous jury beyond a reasonable doubt that they knew they were wrong, though not impossible. Also, writes McQuaid, a 1984 DOJ Office of Legal Counsel opinion says executive branch officials who rely on executive privilege should not be charged with contempt of Congress. The goal is to protect and encourage candid communications between a POTUS and advisors. Ironic that Meadows and Scavino benefit from a policy designed to protect the institution of the presidency when they appear to have been scheming to destroy that very institution. But these decisions take the long view. Assuming, of course, the institution continues to exist, there may also be strategic reasons for the different decisions. Criminal charges are used when you believe compliance is not possible or desirable. Bannon and Navarro are such loose cannons that they would make poor witnesses anyway. DOJ is done with them. Criminal prosecution is about holding people accountable for breaking the rules. DOJ seeks to punish Bannon and Navarro to make examples of them to deter others in the future. But if instead you want to induce testimony, it's better not to use criminal charges. Negotiation and civil lawsuits can be more effective for this purpose. A judge in a civil case can jail a defendant until he testifies. Meadows and Scavino may be in this camp. In addition, DOJ policy says criminal charges should not be filed if there is an adequate alternative remedy. Meadows still has a pending civil suit challenging the subpoena that will resolve soon. That case could result in a court order to comply with the subpoena. There may also be strategic reasons to decline charges against Meadows and Scavino. They may be cooperating with the DOJ. It seems unlikely in light of their public statements, but people often talk tough before personal consequences help them see the light. See Michael Cohen. Just a couple more. It may also be that DOJ considers Meadows and Scafino not as witnesses, but as targets in a conspiracy to defraud the United States in the lawful transition of presidential power. Charging them now could complicate that conspiracy investigation, in part because Sixth Amendment rights would attach. Among other things, DOJ could not use informants against them. Eyes on the prize. And finally, as unsatisfying as this decision is, I, Barb McQuaid, former U.S. attorney, I remain confident that DOJ is not simply shrinking from its duty. I hope that Garland's abundance of caution will make the charges all the more credible if and when they come. And all,
better be
all those
when.
Options,
better be when, I, man. Merrick options. Garland Day better be coming down the pike soon, dude.
I would put my money on their targets. They are targets in other issues and other
bigger
crimes.
Bigger crimes.
That's why.
Well, Mark Meadows, certainly. I mean, the evidence of criminality in the public record, Mark Meadows should spend a good long stretch in prison, and not for the false voting accusations in three different states at three different addresses.
But there should be some recourse from that as well.
Well, I think he's going to lose his voting privileges as a felon, Dom. Yeah. And your buddy, the former meth addicted, allegedly, Steve Bannon, a little coverage of Steve Bannon, found this originally posted at The Atlantic. Steve Bannon is more concerned about his physical appearance than might be guessed. Is that because he's a bloated meth head looking guy? You wouldn't guess him to be a vain sort?
Maybe you should start working out a little bit, lay off the meth, allegedly.
And he's touchy about how listeners describe the program he hosts. I know how touchy Dom gets. The former White House advisor was subject of a lengthy profile by The Atlantic, whose correspondent, Jennifer Senior, exchanged a series of texts with Bannon, and she interviewed him and a number of associates, enemies, and former colleagues in search of the right-wing gadfly's human side. That could be a long... looking for the human side.
Good luck with that.
He left that in a meth pipe many years ago, I suspect, allegedly. Here is what was written about, you know, the meth head looking guy. There were times when my text interactions with Bannon felt like one prolonged Turing test. There were times when he almost resembled a regular human. He would talk about missing his father, who died in January at 100, and how strange it was to be in his childhood home alone. Just sat in the family room for hours, smoking meth. No, I'm just guessing. He would fret about his weight and express pleasure when a newspaper used a photo that did not, for once, make him look god-awful, like some deranged incel by the way of Marie Sendak. Yeah, when all your photos make you look like a deranged incel,
maybe you just look like a deranged incel. I mean,
ooh, this one,
maybe it's not the left side, man. Maybe it's like all sides. Just saying, there is no good side.
Hey, in this one, I only look like an overstuffed meth head.
He looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman now.
That's terrible.
Seymour Hoffman's dead, for those that are unaware. Has been for a while. Senior found the surest way to irritate Bannon was to call his war room program a podcast. Although he insists it's a TV show with an important visual aspect, he broadcasts from the ground floor of a Washington, D.C. townhouse, and there are cameras, bright lights, and backdrops that devoted viewers know well. A fireplace mantle displaying a gold frame picture of Jesus and a black and white poster saying there are no conspiracies, but there are no coincidences. And then he quotes himself, Stephen K. Bannon.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like having a framed quote of oneself.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
A little bit more here. Would-be viewers have been largely out of luck since YouTube yanked this program January 8th, 2021. So that makes you a podcast, but just a little bit more. The whole operation has an amusing shoestring quality to it. The audio occasionally cuts out or sounds like bubbling through a fish tank. Two of Bannon's phones buzz throughout the show. The segment openers aren't always ready when he needs them. It's a bit like Father Coughlin stumbled in to Wayne and Garth's basement. Unlike this fine program, the greatest radio show ever. Never call us a podcast. More devils.
He looks like some disheveled drunk that wandered onto the political stage.
Steve Bannon.
It's very obvious.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Happy days to us all. You can always join us on the phone, 844-967-2789.
What next, Dominic?
Oh, Proud Boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Oh, this is so exciting. I mean, seditious conspiracy, not just once, but a whole nother crew. First, the Oath Keepers, now the Proud Boys. I mean, who's next? Well, I know one guy who's going to be next. That'll be Trump. But let's just back off. We'll take it day by day, minute by minute here. Scott McFarlane from CBS News, he is their congressional correspondent, tweeted out the accusations in the indictment against the Proud Boys and the seditious conspiracy indictment. Here are a few bullet points. Encouraging members of the Proud Boys and others to attend the Stop the Steal protest in D.C. on January 6th. Using websites, social media, other electronic communications to raise funds to support travel and equipment purchases for the trip. Obtaining paramilitary gear and supplies, including concealed tactical vests, protective equipment, and radio equipment for the January 6th attack. Dressing incognito on January 6th rather than wearing Proud Boys colors that had been predominantly displayed at previous events.
Being subtle like fancy brand shirt, right?
Totally. Traveling to D.C. prior to the attack engaging in meetings and encrypted communications in D.C. with in the days leading up to January 6th and on the morning of January 6th to plan for the January 6th attack. So, I mean, they got there ahead of time. You know, they had meetings. I wonder if there were little breakout sessions like, you know, how to hang Mike Pence and how to break through a glass window. So what else we got here? Using programmable handheld radios, encrypted messaging applications, and other communications equipment to communicate and coordinate the January 6th attack, directing, mobilizing, and leading members of the crowd into Capitol grounds and into the Capitol, dismantling metal barricades that had been deployed to demarcate a restricted area to protect law enforcement and occupants of the Capitol, storming past barricades, Capitol Police and other law enforcement officers in efforts to disrupt the proceedings at the Capitol, destroying property, including a metal fence and a window, and, oh yeah, what's this one? Number L, assaulting law enforcement officers. Yeah, back to bands, Proud Boys.
You couldn't do that?
So, very interesting, seditious conspiracy, not just, you know, frivolous fun. This was an attack, a planned, coordinated conspiracy to disrupt the Capitol and these proceedings. And this is the DOJ. This isn't the J6 committee. This isn't some, you know, state investigation. I know there's lots of things going on. This is the Department of Justice. So these are big, big issues, and they're continuing to work, I think, up the food chain. I mean, these guys were the Proud Boys, the bodyguards for Roger Stone during that week. I saw them out there in front. Now, I think Roger Stone tried to stay away, but I wouldn't doubt if he gets caught up this in sometime soon as well.
Well, Dominic, I would say these J6 hearings starting on Thursday in primetime, playing out on Devil Radio in the Shaw, could not come at a better time. A new polling out on this very topic. Who was responsible? Well, here is what new polling, NBC News polling, says. The percentage of Americans who say former President Trump was responsible for the J6 2021 riot at the Capitol dropped to 45%, a new poll released on Monday. 45%. About 17% of respondents said the former president is solely responsible for the rioting. 28% said he's mainly responsible. In January of 2021, 52% of respondents said Trump was responsible. And by comparison, the percentage of Americans in a new poll who said Trump was not really responsible for January 6th grew to 35%, Tom. Just about his base, 35%, up from 29% in January of 2021. About 20% of Americans now say he is somewhat responsible, up from 18%. Somewhat.
Had
a little something to do with it. And, Dom, I know you posted some new reporting statements by Jamie Raskin from the J6 committee. Well, they might contradict the current polling of the American people in that only 45% of people currently, as this moment, think that Donald Trump is solely or mostly responsible for what happened, almost like he was the head of the conspiracy.
Well, what about like partly responsible? I mean, because here's what I would say. There's a lot of information, and we'll read Raskin's quote here in a moment, that has yet to come out. And we talk about this stuff all, you know, every day of the week, right? And so we're a little more tuned in probably than your average news consumer. So I think you're right. This is a very important week, and these are some numbers that I would imagine if people tune in, they'll shift. As mentioned, Jamie Raskin, member of the January 6th committee, said this today. The select committee has found evidence about a lot more than incitement here, and we're going to be laying out the evidence about all of the actors who were pivotal to what took place on January 6th, Raskin said during an interview with the Washington Post Live. Raskin on Monday, more than incitement. Raskin on Monday told the Washington Post Live that this week's hearing will, quote, tell the story of a conspiracy to overturn the 2020 presidential election and block the transfer of power. Asked if Trump is at the center of the conspiracy, Raskin said, I think that Donald Trump and the White House were at the center of these events. That's the only way really of making sense of them all. He noted, however, that people are going to have to make judgments themselves about the relative role that different people played. Yeah, you think? Yes, Trump, the White House, more than just incitement. Yeah, no doubt. So I think absolutely people, that poll will change in a couple of weeks.
Don't get premature incitement, Dom.
Never.
Come back with us. You know, we got a lot more show. You can be a part. We'll get to the phones next. I swear. 844-967-2789. More Devils.
The mood of the crowd was positive and festive.
I'm 10 years old, but I'll beat your ass.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.
I'm going to scissor kick you in the back of the head.
It is absolutely 150% your fault.
I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow. Never seen you looking so lovely
as you did tonight. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Fancy Brand looking all sexy and red up there in the Shaw. Got Evan with me in the world headquarters, lightly screening your calls. And Don with me on the radio at 844-967-2789. We promised we'd go back to the phones. We'll do so right now. Dick from Madison, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dick.
Well, this Proud Boys thing is really something. When you think about it, you really ask the question, who stirred this whole pot from the beginning? I mean, didn't Trump himself say, stand by, stand down?
Step up and stand by.
Yeah, and all the rest of it. But Bannon, when you talked about him earlier, too, isn't he a piece of work? Him and Bill Barr are the two just sleaziest of the sleaze group that I would love to see squirming, but we probably won't. And also just, does Steve Bannon possibly have monkeypox? I mean, there's something up with that guy.
That's
so serious.
That's, you know, really the result of a long life of meth use. I think
it's pretty obvious.
Okay. I thought maybe he should be quarantined, though. But earlier, Joe said something real quick, too, on Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, and where he might be ending up. I think the same.
Blinton College, baby. He's a college man. Maybe.
Well,
maybe.
Yeah. I think maybe the same place that, what was that guy's name in Florida, that security guard Zimmerman? I think Rittenhouse might be ending up going that route, rearrested and back in jail again.
No, just give him time.
Yep. He'll hang himself out there to dry.
Any other thoughts, Dick?
Well, the Proud Boys. What a name, too, by the way. They have a perfect name in my mind, boys. When we were, you know, that 16, 17-year-old age, we had this thing where I grew up, hey, what are you boys up to? And you'd look at them and go, boys, you see a boy, slap them. And that's what somebody needs to do to all of these guys.
Good point, Dick.
Stand back and stand by.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to call them little bitches. And then I do little bitch slaps.
Everybody watching can really be very proud of what's taking place.
844-967-2789. We don't advocate violence, just rhetorical violence. Mark, how you doing?
Well, hang on. No, hey, Mark, I just want to say.
Put you back on hold, Mark. Hold on a second.
The anniversary of storming of the beaches of Normandy. Right? Wasn't there some event? Right? Some original characters? Some of the guys? Some of these soldiers are still alive. Had an event, and I thought about that. I saw some of the quick video of it today, and like, well, this was, you know, these were anti-fascists, man. I mean, we went over to Europe to kill the fascists because fascists want to kill us, so we went over there to kill them. Right? Isn't that what World War II was? Everyone who stormed the beaches were anti-fascist, Antifa. So I just thought it'd be, you know, wise to point that out when people like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and some other white nationalist groups get all offended because, oh, Antifa, we're not gonna, they're gonna, you know, they're gonna give us grief when we march down their streets. Well, yeah, when you're a fascist marching down the street with Nazi and Confederate flags, you should get some local pushback.
We're gonna be doing one thing and one thing only: killing Nazis.
844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC, welcome back.
Well, glad to be here. Glad you took my call, and you just kind of took some of the words out of my mouth. A friend of mine's father was a glider pilot on D-Day, and he actually landed his glider and then proceeded on into, you know, with the rest of the fighting on into Germany, and was actually at one of the camps when it was liberated. So he recognizes these guys for what they are. He actually calls them Nazis and, you know, recognizes them for what they are. I mean, she says that her father has some rather salty things to say about Donald Trump because he recognizes Donald Trump for what he is right now. He's just a fascist. And all these little bitches that are going around, they're like, you know, Mr. Gableman, I wonder if some of the reason he's hiding some of this information is he detected some of this Republican election fraud and conspiracies when he was out doing his little investigations. I wonder if maybe that's why Gableman has been unwilling to share information, in addition not finding any real voter fraud, but maybe he's undercovering evidence of his side election fraud and conspiracy to, you know, to screw up elections in the future.
Well, Mark, you presume he's doing anything for the prior $11,000 a month and the $900,000 and counting. If you believe the Dane County judge, and I do, that was, you know, had to deal with the open records request that Gableman was completely ignoring and, you know, deleting and burning documents, apparently. The judge in that case said, you know, according to the evidence, it's not clear that there's any investigation going on.
It takes time and it's hard to cash checks. And I've seen some social media postings about perhaps double dipping of expenses. So there should be an audit. As far as I'm concerned, we should have an audit of what's going on.
Maybe a cyber audit.
Hire me to do a cyber audit of the Office of Special Counsel, quote unquote, of Gableman.
Maybe we
I'll
should
only charge you like $15,000 a month.
Maybe we should call Tony Evers' office at 608-266-1212 and offer your services, man. You got your NBA.
Right,
you're,
man,
more qualified than the Gableman is to do this election audit. He readily admitted publicly he does not understand how elections work.
And I took the LSAT twice. So it's like almost like I'm an attorney.
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Yes, today is the 78th anniversary of D-Day. Ah, wow. I mean, that is really something when you think about it. 78 years ago, and here we are right now, you know, facing fascism in our own country. 78 years later, after, you know, those very brave troops stormed the beaches, you know, thousands dying on the first day. And here we are going to hold a hearing about what the last administration, what Trump did, and his crew, his administration did to try to block the peaceful transfer of power with fascistic ways, using the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, who have now been charged with seditious conspiracy. That's where we are, 78 years later.
Well, not only there, Dom, but we're also here in the great state of Wisconsin, kind of stunned by a retired judge from Juneau County being assassinated over the course of the weekend. And that shooter, the assassin, also apparently had a hit list, including Tony Evers, Gretchen Whitmer, and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. New reporting, Chris Rickard, considered the source, Wisconsin State Journal, Madison.com. It was the excuses that bothered him most. Then Circuit Judge John Romer told the man who police say would go to Romer's rural Juneau home more than 15 years later and shoot him to death. "You've had a great deal to offer," Romer told Douglas K. Udy after a November 10, 2005 sentencing hearing. "Your personality is strong because you're gregarious, you're outgoing. But there's something about your character where you just can't admit that you've screwed up. And that might be the rest of your life, that you'll never be able to admit that you've just made a mistake." There was little in the 60-page transcript of the hearing that would point to any specific reason Uday, 56, targeted Romer before turning the gun on himself. And investigators have said he planned to target other government officials as well. A list found in his vehicle Friday included Romer, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, according to an official not authorized to speak on the record. A little bit more, but it seems from court and Department of Correction records that Romer's words were prophetic because in the case to come, Uday would escape from prison where he was serving a sentence and file appeals and court challenges disputing the charges he was convicted of after he was caught. Such actions echoed the approach he took in Romer's courtroom that November day when acting as his own attorney. Who's the current guy acting as his
Navarro
own attorney?
Acting Peter as his Navarro? Own attorney. But he's actually an attorney, isn't he? I mean, this guy.
No.
No.
Navarro's
not?
Navarro's got a PhD in econ.
Oh, okay.
So he's learned. He's gone to school for a long time. But it wasn't law school.
I could have a science degree and be really good with a Bunsen burner. Doesn't mean I should be defending myself.
Probably not. A little bit more from this alleged assassin. Such actions echoed the approach he took in Romer's courtroom that November day when acting as his own attorney, he simultaneously pled guilty to a 2001 armed burglary and suggested he didn't do it.
Wasn't me.
While arguing that the evidence in his case had been destroyed by investigators such that he did not believe he could get a fair trial. Yes, I did plead guilty to the charge, but did I actually commit the crime just as I stated to the court because a person went to the crime? Is that actually a crime committed? The answer has to be no. So he pled guilty and still denied committing the crime in the court that day. Romer sentenced him to 6 years in prison and 9 years of extended supervision and more than 5 years in prison and 7.5 years supervision Uday and prosecutors had settled on as part of a plea agreement. The State Department of Justice, which is investigating the shooting at the 68-year-old Romer's home on Woodland Hills Road in the town of Lisbon, did not respond to requests for comment Monday about Uday, the assassin.
Now, obviously, the judge was zip tied to a chair.
Yeah,
I mean,
and then assassinated.
Terrible.
And obviously, there was a prior relationship. I mean, the guy sentenced this guy. But, you know, when you got a list of, what, political targets, that's pretty troubling to me.
You think? Yeah, that's absolutely troubling. And have we heard, has there been verified and confirmed reportings as to any, I don't know, political or religious leanings for the accused murderer?
No, not that I've read. No particular Facebook leanings or whatever you often see reported almost immediately. 844-967-2789. Jack from Milwaukee, welcome. What do you got, Jack?
Hey, Jack.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You guys make a great team. You guys are a couple devils. But anyhow, I'm only meaning that literally. Yeah, you were bringing up 78 years later, you know, we fought fascism. And did you also think that we'd ever have a president named Humpty Dumpty those people suckers and losers? I think that's kind of sad. I don't know if that was for a D-Day or Memorial Day, but one of those days he called
people that would die for their country were the suckers. Because, of course, he would never serve his country, Jack. He only served himself.
That's right. You got it. Great show. And I get a lot of information. I'm so happy you guys are back in Milwaukee. Right here, you guys make my day. So keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it, man.
It does get tiring carrying Dobbs' ass so often, though. I'm just saying. Four. You know, he's not heavy, but he is my co-host.
2789. Appreciate the call, Jack.
Where are we going next?
Well, hell, we can't even start a new topic. We gotta deal with a commercial break coming up. We'll take more of your calls on the other side. No, I would not think that we'd have to be dealing with this again. I would think that these lessons, you know, learn never again. You hear these things, right? Every time there's a mass murder, oh, never again. And, you know, some war that...
This is not who we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely...
It is.
Unfortunately. Certainly, we strive. Hopefully, the universal we, strive to be better. Jack brings up a great point on how the former president would never serve. And, you know, the Trumpsters say, well, he served his country, right? He didn't take a salary. Remember all that? He donated his salary. Please. Please. But it's not just Donald Trump who says, you know, made some reference about suckers and losers, you know, joining armed forces and losing their lives in war.
Or paying taxes, but go ahead.
Right, right. Or he prefers the soldiers that didn't get caught, right? And didn't Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, the other mega Republican from Georgia, make also some reference about throwing your life away if you join the services? So this seems to be a common theme throughout the hardcore megots.
You know, I was acknowledged as a veteran at my son's graduation yesterday. I thought it was a bigger deal he was graduating than I was standing. But anyways, more devils.
They're the foot soldiers of a Jew-hating, mass-murdering maniac, and they need to be destroyed.
I am so proud that you are citizens of our country.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
If you don't know me by now, you will never.
We are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Your calls always welcome. If you don't know us by now, the number is 844-967-2789.
Dominic, this reminds me of all the slow dances I did at the Officers Club when I was in the military early 1990s. Lady in Red and If You Don't Know Me By Now.
By Simply Red.
Is that the same band?
There's yeah. A red theme going on here.
And If You Don't Know Me By Now, you should have known this was coming.
Lots of red. How about Lady Red Light from Great White? If we're going to do red, can we hear some good music?
Oh, he seems a little buttered now. Turn that down. You know, I had a different direction I wanted to take this segment, but I'll throw it out there anyways. You know, my pal Doug LaFollette's running for, Secretary of State.
Are you sure?
He's held the office for 40-something years, right? And yes. He's got the first name in Wisconsin politics, LaFollette. If you can't win with a name like LaFollette, then you should take like a 2-month vacation right before the election. Doug LaFollette apparently heading to Africa for 2 months.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going on safari. Now, the last guy I know that went to Africa was Joel Clayfish, went literally on safari to Africa. And while that was happening, the Ukrainian war apparently broke out, and he couldn't fly out of Africa. He could not find... He had to fly out of Ethiopia. It took him days. He was stranded in Africa. Now, from the perspective of Doug LaFollette, who's going to Africa, apparently, reportedly, to the end of July, I mean, he could miss a few days and... He might not make it back until after the primary. And I don't know if you know, but I kind of raised holy hell because he's being primaried. There's a consultancy firm in Milwaukee that's apparently putting a backer up on Doug LaFollette. And I thought that was, you know, that was blue on blue violence. But I didn't know Doug is taking a couple months off this summer.
I mean,
come on, man.
Listen,
go.
I mean, Doug's
up qualified for the ballot.
Right? I mean, if you don't travel now, when are you going to do
it? He's on his bucket list.
He's a 40-year incumbent. Well, I would also, you know, question the timing. You also got to live, man. And, you know, Doug's probably not going to go in 10 more years. So you got to, if you're going to go, you better go now, dude.
But do you go in the heat of the summer? I mean, couldn't you wait till the fall, like let's say mid-November, Doug? Could you travel to Africa in mid-November after you won the election?
Just saying. He's going to win the... So do you think... Let me ask you now. Are you any more inclined to vote for the Democratic...
No. I think that's stupidity to undermine Doug LaFollette's candidacy.
Because
he's a figurehead unless you beat him, and then it becomes a really problematic circumstance because the Republicans would like to win that seat with Amy Loudon back. And if they do, and they would assume that's a red wave, redder than Fancy Brian's shirt, if they win that sort of red wave election, and let's say, you know, candidate Rebecca Clayfish or Tim Michaels becomes the Republican governor, well, of course, they're going to throw out the Wisconsin Elections Commission. They've already threatened to do so. And the next logical step is to anoint the Secretary of State the most powerful election person in the state of Wisconsin. Well, I would point out Doug won re-election while while Scott Walker was winning re-election. Evers won on the same ballot as Walker. So Doug is pretty bulletproof unless some jackass in Milwaukee screws it up for him.
I mean, LaFollette won on the same ballot as Walker.
Yes, what I said.
Yeah, okay. You said Evers, but yes. Yeah, got it. Yes. Doug LaFollette, the Democrat Secretary of State, won while Republican Governor Scott Walker won. So, yes. I mean, but what does that tell you?
Yeah, sort of a universal appeal. He has the right name.
Exactly. And people know the name. They see the name. They've seen the name for 40 years. Does that give him, you know, give the guy a little wiggle room to, you know, go take a little trip?
You know, if you were his campaign advisor,
would you advise against going on that trip?
Do you think he has campaign advisors? I'm less clear. I don't think Doug has any sort of consultants running his
so
campaign.
That's the opponent, do you think the opponent's going to come out and start raising hell? Hey, Doug's not even here. He's in Africa. Like, start doing like the Trump.
If you're trying to win the race.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're trying to win, you're trying to win, right?
Well, it depends. Is Doug packing his golf clubs for Africa or not? If you bring your golf clubs, you're in big
you're
trouble,
staying
Doug.
For a while?
If I was golfing while on the big continent, you know, I'd rent some golf clubs. Don't take them on the... Don't get caught in the airport Ted Cruz style like you're heading to Cancun, my friend. The other big news over the course of the weekend, you know, as all these candidates try to qualify for the ballot, Tim Michaels, who got the big Trump endorsement, and I understand the headline says, Michaels says he didn't promise anything for the Trump endorsement. No promises.
Oh, yeah, but it didn't take long for the Michaels campaign to get new graphics in all of their commercials saying, endorsed by Trump, the Trump-endorsed candidate, all over it. So he is playing it up.
According to the article at Urban Milwaukee Online Daily, Michaels said Trump told him he was endorsing him because Michaels is the candidate who can beat Democratic Governor Tony Evers in November. Michael said he didn't make any promises or assurances to Trump about the election or Wisconsin's election laws. Career politicians, they make quid pro quos, and we didn't do that. Well, then you didn't do it right, Tim. He loves a quid pro quo. Don't you know his track record?
The easiest way to do business with Trump.
According to Michaels, I wouldn't do that. He didn't ask me for anything. I didn't promise anything. We're just honored to have the support of the President of the United States. You mean the former President of the United States,
Right? Oh, yeah, yes. Oh, he said the former, or did you say the former?
No, he said, I didn't promise him anything, as I read the quote. We're just honored to have the support of the President of the United States.
What a joke.
What an
embarrassment. And when Trump gets charged with seditious conspiracy, when he gets charged with something more than incitement, you know, just remember who the chief, the insurrectionist in chief, endorsed, Tim Michaels, who still refers to Trump as the President of the United States.
Michaels said he and Trump didn't really talk about the 2020 election, but when asked by WPR whether he believed President Biden had won Wisconsin, Michaels declined to say, nobody knows how many fraudulent votes there were in 2020. I have questions. As so many people have questions, you know, Justice Gableman, he's not even sure the extent of it. I'm not the governor now. These problems with election integrity happened in previous administrations. I'm a windshield guy. I have to look forward. I have to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, rigged elections and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, Mr. Michaels.
Well, we'll
see if he can actually get on the ballot, though, Crudy.
That's the interesting part. He apparently has multiple addresses, you know, like a mailing address and an actual physical address. And the Wisconsin Elections Commission says you must put both. And he did not. So, you know, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, in their own little strategic effort, trying to push the Trump endorsed Tim Michaels off the ballot, That would sting a little. Come back to Happier Happy Hour. More Devil's Advocates.
He said, by the way, there's no quid pro quo, and there isn't.
Incited the erection against the United States.
It's Enrico!